We acknowledge that we are on Treaty 6 territory, the gathering grounds of many diverse First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples whose footsteps have marked this land and whose presence continues to enrich our vibrant community. Hello and welcome back to Research Recasted, the Knowledge Mobilization Podcast. I'm Brooklyn Lestrician and I'm here with Natalie Smattis.
Hello everyone.
In today's episode, we are joined by Elizabeth Beliveau. Elizabeth Beliveau is an artist and author from Nova Scotia. She is Associate Professor and Chair of Studio Arts at McEwen University. Elizabeth holds a BFA from AU Arts and an MFA from Concordia University, Montreal. Elizabeth's recent exhibitions include Bend at the Prince Takamoto Gallery, Canadian Embassy in Tokyo, Gallery 44 Toronto, and the Louis A. Rubin Cohen Gallery at University of Moncton. Recent screenings include the Irish Film Institute, Studio 44 Stockholm, and Grand Gallery Public Screen Vancouver. Thanks for being with us today, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for this invitation.
I'm very excited to talk about your research as someone who has loved the arts for many years. I'm very interested in your work. We're going to start off with what started your arts career.
I had a really excellent high school art teacher who was also the football coach. And one day he took us on a tour of AU Arts in Mokinsis. And I realized that adults could make art their whole lives and get degrees in it. And my life was forever changed. I think I've always been drawing and making things. So it was just such a privilege to realize you could carry that on throughout your whole life.
Yeah. What kind of, you said you started with drawing, but what was kind of your main focus in the arts?
Right. In my undergrad, my major was in sculpture. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was really kind of formal sculpture practices. So we were learning bronze, casting, concrete, metal, wood shop. And then I did my master's degree in fiber and material practices at Concordia in Montreal, Jiaozhaange. And there, I think we'll talk about it soon, but my practice diverged and really started to embrace DIY strategies and stop motion animation and textiles. So a real roundabout way of working through what sculpture and 3D practice can be. Mm-hmm. And then my drawing practice developed through zine making and has taken the form of graphic novels in the last few years. So
oh, it's very cool.
a separate kind of stream in my practice.
That's very cool. For the graphic novels, what kind of graphic novels do you do?
Well, they're a combination of drawing and text. Some of them are a bit more prose and sketchbook style, and others are a bit more like a graphic novel with squares and text mm-hmm. and ink wash. My recent one is called Condo Lady, and that one's pretty autobiographical, diaristic even maybe, looking at the experience of actually teaching online during the pandemic mm-hmm. And also going through advanced maternal age pregnancy and miscarriage and then having a baby mm-hmm. here in Amaskwatchewska again in Treaty 6 territory and getting to know this place during that strange time. And I'm currently working on a new graphic novel.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Is that typically kind of the theme that you like to go for is kind of like women focused?
Yeah. I think as I've grown in my practice, I've realized how valuable it is to me to find other women's stories in art and art history. My training is very specifically Western art history, mm-hmm. Western European art history and contemporary art here in Turtle Island. I think more and more I realize the value of finding stories of women and where they're buried mm-hmm. and also trying to amplify those stories and also contribute my own. So I think that's where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. My new book is actually about birth. And so again, just exploring those stories that are somehow strangely not shared enough, mm-hmm. but very common. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, through my one art history class I took, there wasn't many female artists I can remember, so that's super cool that you're finding mm-hmm. all those stories. Yeah.
I try to bring in art historical references to my work as well to ground it in my education. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in my graphic novel, Condo Lady, There's images from my everyday life and the city. And then it's kind of interwoven with images that I'm copying from art historical paintings, where there's representations of pregnant women. And in history, a lot of the time in Western European art history, I think up until the Victorian era, one out of four women died in childbirth. And so a lot of those paintings of women that you see are paintings that were trying to capture the likeness of a woman in the event that she would probably die in childbirth. So a lot of those paintings, the women are actually pregnant, and that's why they were commissioned, or they're done from a dead subject. So I'm interested in kind of, in all of my graphic novels, I reference art historical paintings, either to do with still life or now portraiture of pregnant women. And I hope with my new book around birth, my research is looking at how we image birth and postpartum and also postpartum depression and how that's represented even in contemporary art, but really looking at art history.
That's cool.
And I've received two grants from Canada Council and Edmonton Arts Council, thank you both, for the development of my new book. And my publisher, Conundrum Press, is supporting this as well. And I will be working on that as soon as my sabbatical begins this summer, starting July 1st. So I've really been at this point developing and drawing my own experiences. And then I hope to be going to Copenhagen to reference some archives there of some printmakers that were doing very good work documenting and drawing birth.
That's very exciting.
Very interesting.
I think we're going to move on to your exhibit, The Scent of Full Moon. Can you explain to us kind of what this exhibit is about?
So The Scent of Full Moon, it was actually called The Scent of Full Moon Studies for Pure Movement. In French, Le Parfum de la Pleine Lune, Études à l'égard de Mouvement Absolu. And that was at the Galerie d'Art Louise et Ruben Cohen in Moncton at the University of Moncton. And that exhibition was really looking at still life and also the writing of Clarice Lispector. I center still life in my practice because it was a genre of art that women were allowed to participate in. And so there are paintings in the still life genre produced by women. Clara Peters is one that I look at a lot. So thinking about how still life was used in a way to insert some kinds of women's storytelling in art history. So a lot of the objects are symbolic, they're metaphoric, there's embedded secrets within them and stories. So that kind of coded painting I'm really interested in. So this exhibition was really looking at a lot about Clara Peters, looking at her work closely, trying to look at her painting compositions, think about the objects within them, sometimes sculpt them and 3D print them as sculptures. And then looking at the writing of Clarice Lispector, who's a Brazilian author whose work has been sort of inspiring my artistic practice for many years. Her work is really transformative in that it speaks to the like cellular level in the body and then in one line can just expand into the universe. So this kind of almost nauseating back and forth and very odd writing, very poetic. So I think her work has been really, really motivating for me to think about stop motion animation, the kind of suspension of time, the idea of slow watching. So thinking about relations between what we think of as material and liveness. And I think a lot of her work speaks to the female experience. And she's also a mother. So I read her work now with a bit of a different eye now that I'm also a mother. So I quote her in the exhibition. Also, a lot of the titles for the works come from translations of Sappho, especially the book If Not Winter by Anne Carson, which is also a really important book to me. And so a lot of the works, the titles are directly pulled from Anne Carson's translations.
Cool. For people who don't really know the art industry, can you explain a little bit what a residency is?
Yeah, for sure. Residencies can be really wonderful. there's so many kinds. I'll start with that. There's residencies that are, they put out calls for submissions and artists apply. Sometimes they're around a theme. And then there's a selection committee and they choose artists. They bring them to a place. Usually the locations have studios, facilities, and housing. Some residencies are 2 weeks, some are a year, some are 2 years. And during that time, you just focus on your practice. And you're usually surrounded by other artists or a mentor. And you can really focus on your work. Some of them are similar maybe to like Banff Center for the Arts, for example, is kind of like a post-secondary, but there's no structured classes. So you're really driving your own research and practice. Some residencies you pay to go. Some pay you to go. Some you can apply to, for grants to support that, because it is, it can be very expensive and costly to leave your life and go somewhere else and just focus on work. Some will feed you 3 meals a day while you're there. So there's a whole range of how these are set up. And there's a huge network that I think students and artists can tap into to learn more about that and also find recommendations for very excellent ones and ones that are still figuring it out.
That kind of gets us to your residency in Tokyo. What was that like for you, and kind of how did that come about?
Oh, I was extremely lucky. I've actually done 3 residencies in Tokyo now. So the first one came about from living in Quebec, and the Conseil des Arts et des Lettres de Québec had a partnership with Tokyo Wondersight, and they select artists and they fund them to go to Tokyo and work for, I think my residency was 2 months, maybe 3 months. So that was my first introduction to Tokyo. And when I got there, I was actually fully immersed in making stop motions. That was kind of the beginning of figuring out how to do portable stop motion practice. And then I just was so blown away by the experience, just that immersion in new language and the international artists that were moving through there, and the materials available, access to nature. There were just so many things that were luscious and generous, and I wanted to go back. So that was the first residency. And then I returned to do a residency at Yukobo in Tokyo, which was more of a, maybe a, like a suburb kind of part of Tokyo, which was also very unique. And then I went to a residency in rural southern Japan near Fukuoka in Itoshima called Studio Kura. And that was wonderful. It was in agricultural lands. It was luscious. It was tropical. There was a beach. It really nourished the way I was thinking about, I guess, I was looking at fruit a lot because of still life history and thinking about abundance. And I think coming from Turtle Island, I think it was just such an incredible experience to be in this lush agricultural landscape. So that actually is where I was doing a lot of scanning of fruit and then 3D printing. Even though we were working in an old rice barn, they actually had 3D printing and CNC machines. So it was a pretty amazing experience. And then I've just been accepted to go back in September to Art Satoya, which is in Saga Prefecture. So I'll be there in September and October with my toddler and my partner. So it's one of the rare residencies that is permitting a partner and a child to come with the artist. Yeah, so I'll be there and we'll be working on a series of mobiles.
Cool. I can imagine too, being able to do all these residencies in different places in the world really kind of help your creative mind a little bit.
It does. I mean, they're also, they offer such different things. Banff Center for the Arts is very close by, and they offer great facilities and huge studios. I've also been really privileged to attend residencies at Struts in New Brunswick, and the Yukon at Kayak, which is incredibly unique to be up north in the winter. So they all kind of introduce a new community of people that work in culture and arts. And I think those connections are often lifelong. And I'd say they kind of fueled my zine practice, because I had done several residencies early on before like internet was like really easy. And so I was really into mail art. And so to keep connected to all these people and to kind of keep sharing our stories, I would create zines and then mail them to everyone I was meeting. And then that kind of spurred like my whole zine practice, which then evolved into graphic novels.
That's cool. Yeah, I was going to say like probably a big part of doing the residencies is like connecting with all those people, and you have those connections for forever, and you know, as long as you keep them, but and that can be really helpful along the way too.
And helping to inspire as well.
Yeah, these residencies often ask that the artist have a show at the end of the residencies where the public is invited to come and or do an artist talk. And usually the artist will introduce themselves that way, so you can very quickly find connections and collaborators, and it's a great opportunity.
Sounds awesome.
I love artist talks. I think to see a face behind what you're looking at, it's really nice. I think we're going to move on to the National Film Board. I watched your, it was kind of like a short still, what it was called, Feather? Very cute. The wording at the end was very nice. It was nice to see. How did that come about, working with the National Film Board?
Yeah, I did my undergrad at University of Alberta, and then I traveled to Jojongé, Montreal, after doing many residencies, and was sort of starting from scratch after my undergrad and not having access to facilities. So I started to think about my sculpture practice, which was quite large, and then how to manage a sculpture practice when all I had was like a tiny little apartment and a small table and no money. And so I started doing stop motion animation, where I would just tape a camera to my wall with a 2x4 and use very rudimentary tech. And then I could make whole universes and sculptural worlds with many different kinds of materials, but it could be like, you know, the size of a plate. So it was a way to kind of make my sculpture practice come to life, but also be very portable and manageable. And then the NFB launched a program, so the National Film Board of Canada, called Hot House. And Hot House invited artists who were not professionally trained, who just had interest in animation, to apply for a residency there. It was 3 months long. It was well-funded. You got a studio and even like Foley artists to work with, and you had to pitch to a director every once in a while and get feedback. So it was really exciting. It was like a bit of a pressure cooker because you had 3 months to make. I mean, they were only asking, I think, for a 10-second animation. So for me, the way I work is really loose and not perfect, like at all. So it was easy for me. I think I made a few animations, like it was because I'm a little sloppy. But other people did like meticulous ones. So it was an amazing opportunity to see how all the other artists approached animation, to realize that professional level that the NFB holds. And it was really awesome for me to realize that I don't do that. So I don't have scripts. I don't have characters. Pitching to people was not my comfort zone. So I realized I really am a self-taught animator who likes to work in a studio. I like more experimental animations. And so my new ones are almost just time lapses. They're really just observing things unfold in time. Objects move on their own without a lot of manipulation from me. So I've gone pretty full circle from like actually creating a plasticine little dude to now just wanting to slowly observe like the bloom of a flower and capture that. So yeah, there's so many ways to approach stop motion animation. And I think NFB was an awesome opportunity to learn kind of what's available, but also maybe how I'm not really looking for that. There's different roads to take.
When you started stop motion to where you are now, was it just trial and error, or were you doing lots of research to see how other people do it, or were you just kind of figuring it out as you went?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the interesting things, I was making very large sculptures in undergrad, and they were also soft sculptures, so they were really like movable things. And someone just said, "Why don't you try animating it?" So it was kind of a late night thing. We sort of like snuck into an animation studio, tried it out, and it was really exciting. And I was like, I want to do more of this. And then a friend of mine had a residency at Quick Draw Animation Society.
Oh, cool.
Who also, we were all broke undergrads. And so I got to be snuck into that studio and secretly use their equipment at night. And then, so I think it was all very DIY, very community support, little trials, like kind of like starts and stops. And then having that kind of locked in so that when I did have access to facilities and bigger opportunities, like I had a good understanding of how to do this, but also that independence as a creator to know that you can take care of your own practice. And then learning how to write grants so that you can can make that time happen in your life. So yeah, there's a lot of animations that are not not on my website or Vimeo account. lots of experimentation for sure. Yeah, and lots of, you know, even technical learning where you lose files, files get corrupted. It's, all those things happen.
It's all part of the process.
What have been some of your biggest challenges with your arts career so far?
Oh, it's different every season. And I think now the most difficult thing is time. As a professor and a chair and a new mother, finding time is really difficult. And that kind of focus. Animation isn't something you can just do for like half an hour and then, you know, do something else. It's really like you need 3-4 days cleared to just be in the studio, get into that mindset, get into the rhythm. It's very physical. And so you really need to be completely committed and focused. So that's very challenging now. I think earlier in my life, finances were the biggest challenge. And housing was a really big challenge. And now I think it's really transformed. Now I can manage grants. I have an income. I have a home, but I don't have time. So I don't know. I think that's like just sort of how maybe life unfolds for many people. but also I think understanding responsibility as well, and taking up space, I think, is a big a big question for me at this point in my practice. I think when I was younger, I wanted to be visible. I wanted to take space. I was wanting to insert myself into the community. And I think as I grow and move, also I'm relatively new here in Treaty 6. I hope that I'm listening more and also making more space for other people and also checking my privilege quite a lot, that I do have a lot of stability here now and thinking about how to share that. And also when I make work, because of the limited time and awareness of all the amazing creators that are here, hoping that it's worthwhile, that it's contributing. I'm trying to be more intentional, I think, is where I'm at right now.
Yeah. I would say, too, being young, anytime I do like a creative project, I find myself to be very competitive with other people. And instead of collaborating, I want to be almost like the best. You probably feel the same, Natalie, with your music.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, in school, it's like, okay, this is your chance to like really, you know, make connections and get yourself out there. And then once you're kind of established in there, it's like, well, I could slow down a little bit. So I can see
It's nice. Yeah. It's nice to hear that.
I think also serving on juries and boards and like of artist-run centers and starting to understand just the incredible wealth of artists we have here and kind of realizing there's like times and places where like certain voices need to be, you know, amplified and supported more. So I'm trying to listen more a bit, I think, now. I'm also like, I'm very much enjoying making work secretly.
Nice.
I feel like my job demands a lot of social skills, a lot of public. I think when I do something like artist residencies or all the other things as well, it's very public. So I think there's moments where it's nice to be secret and private. And, you know, that idea that no one's watching you in the studio. So, you know, you can make mistakes, you can experiment. They don't all have to go somewhere or be seen.
I think that's very healthy.
Yeah. I want to talk about the Touring Children's Museum project and your work with them. What is that?
That's Musée Ambulant. It's it's a organization in Quebec. It is what you said. It's a traveling children's museum, and they work with contemporary artists, and they try to find ways to introduce contemporary art practices to children and children of all different ages. So they give different access points to work that might seem like a barrier to young people. So for instance, the show we just had at the museum in Sherbrooke, they took images of all these artists' artworks that were in the museum that they kind of included in the exhibition. And they actually made a coloring book so kids could kind of engage that way. So it was still from my abstract animation became a coloring book page. And I don't work directly with them. I'm actually an artist that they sort of purchased a work from to include in their moving museum. But they are really good at communication, sharing photos of the events. They did pop-up film screenings in like the park with beautiful installs, and they had my animations playing inside. And then,
very sweet.
Although it's abstract, it's about still life. They're very odd. They found ways to get children to engage with them and identify what's happening. And I, as a new mother, am now thinking more and more about how do I include that part of my life and learning in my work. So through Musée Ambulant's modeling of how to do this, I'm really inspired now to think about how does my toddler work with me a little. And so with the residency in Japan coming up in the fall, where they're permitting my toddler to join me, when I make the mobiles, I'll be including him in that work as well. And I think because they're abstract forms, they're very physical, they're very colorful, I think it's something that a child can just respond to physically, intuitively. And part of this residency, I'm going to work with the Takayo Library and hopefully try to propose a children's workshop so that toddlers and small children can learn how to make basic mobiles with me. And my Japanese skills are terrible, but I figure if I'm working with toddlers and we're just working with material, physical things, there's ways to communicate about how to build things in space. So that's kind of the new direction I'm going with my research in the fall is, mobiles, children, and the Musée Ambulant is like really a source of inspiration of like, yes, you can bridge contemporary art and children. You don't have to oversimplify it. Like, I think they have incredible intelligence, and it's just kind of offering that to them to engage with.
An incredible imagination.
Yeah, that's super cool. We've had a couple guests who have been talking about the children's rights and things like mm-hmm. that too. And it's always interesting to hear, because I feel like they're very underrepresented and don't get as many opportunities like that. So that's very important yeah. work.
Yeah. I think as arts and culture workers, we really need to make sure that the future, like that it continues to grow yeah. and be inclusive, and you know that kids aren't intimidated by contemporary art mm-hmm. or, you know, that's just kind of another language for them mm-hmm. to access.
Cool.
When I was young, the arts was kind of more of a privilege, like you were mm-hmm. mentioning before. So making sure that it is accessible to everyone it's great work.
Yeah.
My very last question, we ask all of our researchers this question, is do you have any advice for any listeners, students, or faculty?
I don't know if I have advice, but I have heard some good advice mm-hmm. I'd like to
yeah,
share.
Sure.
Actually, an alumni of our program, artist Brenda Draney, who currently has an exhibition at the Art Gallery of Alberta. Brenda's a phenomenal painter. And Brenda shared an artist talk a few weeks ago with Emmanuel Osahor. And she gave incredible advice to young artists. I'm not going to be able to repeat exactly what she said, but the gist was, if you're thinking of being an artist, don't wait, do it now. Mm-hmm. It is urgent. And like the longer you wait, the more difficult life gets. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be easier than now to get started. And I really appreciated that. I thought, that's wisdom. That's somebody who knows. It just gets more difficult. There's more barriers. There's more self-doubt if you just keep putting it yeah. off. Thanks to Brenda Draney for that. And I also would encourage anyone to go see Brenda's exhibition at AGA right now.
Cool.
Awesome. Thank you for being with us today. It was really refreshing to talk to you. It was awesome. Thank you.
Thank you both so much for this invitation. I really appreciate it.
Well, that's all we have for today's episode of Research Recasted. If you want to support this podcast, you can visit Research Recasted on your favorite podcast platform to find new episodes every 2 weeks. Also, don't forget to check us out on Instagram at Research Recasted, where you can leave us a like, give us a follow, or send us a message if you have any follow-up questions from today's episode. This has been Research Recasted, a knowledge mobilization podcast, brought to you by the Office of Research Services and the Faculty of Fine Arts and Communications at McEwen University. Funding for the podcast is partially provided by the Government of Canada through the Research Support Fund. Research Recasted is hosted and produced by Brooklyn Logician and Natalie Smattis. Music, sound design, and editing is by Natalie Smattis. Research, copy editing, and scripting is by Brooklyn Logician. And our executive producer is Hugh McKenzie.